This is an Enterprise Time Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Chris Sherry, Regional Vice President for Forescout.
Good morning, Ian. Really happy to be here today. As you said, I'm the Regional Vice President at Forescout Technologies. I'm responsible for the EMEA North region, so I look after the sales organization within the UK, Nordics, and the Benelux territories. I've been with Forescout for about 3 years now. I just find it such an interesting place to be. You know, I absolutely love what I do in, and that's because we're just addressing a really significant challenge that many of our customers are facing at the moment, which is quite simply how to get an understanding of everything that's connecting to their network. So it's a great place to be at this time.
That everything connected to a network is a nightmare, because it's not just IT connecting to a network. Somebody will get a new toy for Christmas, come into the office and connect it to the network. Facilities management will connect a fridge, a television, a dishwasher to the network. How do you begin to understand what's connected to the network properly?
You're absolutely hitting the nail on the head in terms of the challenge that we see today. If we look at what's happening in the connected world that exists all around us, there is an explosion of devices that are connecting to the network, and they're all manner and types. You've named just a few of them there. If we look at what Gartner are saying to us right now, they're forecasting there could be as many as 20 billion devices connected to the network by next year. That number could rise to 50 billion by 2022. You and I could debate that number, in, but I think we could probably both agree it's a big number. And if we look at that number, at least 60% of those are coming into the enterprise. So it's not just about what's happening at home, but I'm sure my network at home is just like yours, absolutely laced with wireless speakers and iPads and Xboxes and all the rest of it. But in the corporate environment, we've got exactly the same challenge as well. And if we look just this year, IDC were forecasting there could be as many as a billion devices coming online this year alone, and over 80% of those are in the IoT and OT space. So in other words, we've just got a rise of unmanaged, non-traditional things coming onto the network. And the challenge there, which you're beginning to allude to, is you just can't see those through traditional means. And the normal way of discovering something that's on your network would be to put a piece of software onto it, to put an agent onto it and say, okay, I can now talk to you, interrogate you, and begin to understand what it is that you're all about. But you can't do that with network fridges and drinks machines and IP CCTV cameras. And the real challenge, of course, is that the organization that's responsible for the security, the CISO and his team, if they don't know that these things are there, then how can they say confidently to their board or to their leaders that, you know what, we're secure, I've got you covered, because actually they're blind. And in my experience, I speak to a lot of organizations on week in, week out. I speak to CIOs and CISOs. In my experience of talking to these people, we'll find they're blind to at least 30% of the endpoints that are connected to the network. And that's a real challenge.
But how do we tighten this up? We went through a phase where we controlled every device that came onto our network. Then, as people started bringing new devices in, as we started to rely on users to buy their own laptops or their phones or other devices, we set up wireless networks and we just gave the password to anybody who wanted it. The net result is that we handed control away. Taking control back, ironic given that we're in the process of a Brexit election, is never an easy thing and is always fraught with pain and tears at the end of the day. What can ITSec do to realistically get some control?
You're right. The reason why we find ourselves in this situation is for the right reasons. We wanted to be agile. Organizations wanted to enable flexible working. They want to let people come into their environments and really connect to the network to get their job done. We are where we are for the right reasons, and the explosion of devices creates efficiencies. It creates good things for organizations, drives productivity. That's good. But yes, how do we gain control? Well, if we approach this challenge in the way that we've always approached it, which is to try and put an agent onto these things, then that simply is not possible. We have to look to innovate and think about this problem differently. And this is really the strength of the organization that brought me to Forescout. This is why I wanted to get involved, because we solve this challenge in a fundamentally different way. And that is to think about, how do we take control? How do we understand what's on the network without the need to put a piece of software onto it, without the need to put an agent onto these endpoints? In other words, we see what's happening on the network in a different way. And by doing that, we can then begin to think about how we take control, but keep the agility that the organizations want in the first place, to allow people to still bring their own devices to work, or to allow contractors to come in and gain access to whatever they need to get their job done.
So what is that different way?
So the different way fundamentally is to build up a foundational layer of cyber hygiene. So I would argue that if you truly want to secure any organization, If you want to build a robust security strategy, the starting point is to get this foundational layer in place. In other words, to understand everything that's on the network and then build up from there. And the way to do that is to look at how do we truly get 100% visibility. That has to be the starting point. Gain visibility of everything on the network. And the way that we do that is through an agentless solution. So we have a solution, a technology, if you will, that's able to interrogate the network, talk to the network, see all the traffic that's happening across it without the need to deploy agents to these endpoints. And in this way, we're truly able to gain 100% visibility. We see all of the endpoints that are connected.
So see all the endpoints. That would be nice if every endpoint spoke IP, but every endpoint doesn't speak IP. We have OT and IoT networks out there using a wide range of different protocols that IT has no clue about. They wouldn't know what that protocol was. They wouldn't know how to understand the types of devices using that protocol. And the people who brought those in tend to be engineers who, in a lot of organizations, spend a lot of their time generally at war with IT because they have their way of doing it and IT has their own way of doing it. The two never meet. So how do you get that visibility? How do you get that understanding?
This is a really important area. What we're touching upon here, Ian, is the convergence of IT and OT, isn't it? What we're talking now is about solutions, endpoints, processes that are not on an IP network. They're industrial control systems. They're doing important jobs for us in factories or controlling critical national infrastructure for us. Historically, these environments were not connected to the outside world. They were somewhat safe. They existed within their own four walls of that manufacturing plant or that energy substation or whatever it may be. So we didn't really need to worry about the outside world. But today, these OT environments are connected to IP networks, to IT networks, because we want to interrogate them. We want to gain information from them, use big data to drive efficiencies. So we are building a bridge between IT and OT, and this presents the challenge that you're talking about here. We've suddenly got, again, non-traditional endpoints existing in OT environments, operating technology environments, that are suddenly at risk because they're being connected to the outside world.
But where are you getting that knowledge from for IT to say, that's a SCADA device that is now being seen on a network, that's this protocol, that protocol, this other protocol? That knowledge doesn't exist for most organizations.
We collect that information for them. This is what we bring for organizations out there that are really struggling with this challenge of visibility across IT and OT. With Forescout solution, we're able to see all of the endpoints across an IP network. Great, we've covered that. But we're also able to gain visibility, deep visibility down into the OT space as well. So where we hop off the IP network and onto a SCADA network, into the industrial control systems. So we're going to integrate with the networks that exist in those environments. We're going to look at deep packet inspection, if you will, to gather information about what is happening on those networks and begin to build a picture, a baseline, if you will, of what good looks like. And if we understand what good looks like, by extrapolation, we can figure out what bad looks like. And if we see something happening that shouldn't be happening, we can begin to take action. But it all begins by building this visibility, this understanding of what's going on there.
But a common concern for those who've designed and built OT networks is not just we're not building this to be connected to the outer world, but you want to connect to us, but you are the cybersecurity problem. You can't secure IP. Why would we want you trying to manage our network?
We see this all the time. Now, I get into some really interesting conversations with our customers. Sometimes I'm talking to stakeholders that exist in networking and security, and we have to find a common understanding. But you've already made the point. We also talk to IT and OT groups of people. And OT, they have different needs to the IT folk. On the IT side of the house, security is very, very important. That's been acknowledged and recognized for some time. That's now a board level conversation for many organizations out there. That's recognized. The OT space is different. Here we're talking about critical processes. It could be the fundamental business is run by these OT processes. Here, health and safety becomes extremely important. Availability is more important because that's the lifeblood of the business. We've got to keep those processes running. So the people responsible for those OT environments, that's what they're focused on. Security is there, of course it is. But cybersecurity might be a little bit further down the line. Maybe here within the OT space, cyber resilience is a really interesting thing to consider as well. Not just the security, but how resilient are the systems that are running these really important processes. But you're right to acknowledge that they are focused and their modus operandi has to be to keep these OT systems running. But we have to acknowledge in this modern connected world that we live in, there is risk there. There is risk as IT and OT converge. that important processes, manufacturing plants, power stations could be compromised, and we have to take steps to protect them.
But this two worlds colliding has another problem. The first is that if we look at IP environments, we're finally starting to drive the message and have it accepted that patch quickly, patch immediately. Don't wait 6 months to assess the patch. Get it out there now.
Get it out there. Yeah, absolutely.
When we look at OT, it's not a world that was designed for continual patching. In fact, if you're not careful, trying to patch devices that don't have a lot of memory, don't have a lot of space, can not only take one device down, it can cause a cascade system failure. How do you marry together two very disparate approaches to security?
You're right, absolutely right. Comes back to the point I just made. Availability in the OT space is all. We have to keep that power company generating power. We have to keep the manufacturing plant producing goods. Availability is all. And you're quite right. These systems, these legacy-based systems, they were never designed in some cases to be connected to the outside world. These could be manufacturing plants that are 30, 40, 50 years old. Pieces of machinery are put in to last that length of time even today. So we frequently find legacy systems, legacy operating systems running these critical processes, and they simply cannot be touched. They're so fragile in some cases. If you make a change to them, then you do risk interrupting the very job that they're there to do. So we approach the problem slightly differently. What we have to find a way to do is, firstly, baseline what good looks like. That still is important. We've got to understand how should this be operating. But then we have to acknowledge that we can't necessarily make the changes we want to, as we would in the IT world, to drive a patch, for example. So what we're looking to do here is figure out, okay, what does good look like? How should this OT environment be operating? And then wrap a security blanket around it and say, okay, I know I can't change you. I know I can't patch you, but at least I understand what you should look like, what you should do. And I'm going to wrap this blanket around you, if you will, and then monitor you. And make sure that if you start doing something that actually is out of the norm, if I'm spotting an anomaly, in other words, or an inefficiency or a misconfiguration for what you should look like, then at least I can report on that. So in other words, we have a passive way to talk to the OT environments by talking to the network, not necessarily directly to the endpoint in terms of putting an agent onto it. We're agentless, remember. And that means that we're not going to interrupt these often delicate or fragile processes, but we still enable people to make defensible decisions, to make informed decisions about what needs to happen.
So how do you establish when that is out of norm? And let me give you an example. I'm running a pumping station. I have three pumps in series. Any of those pumps can run at full speed. It's not unreasonable, therefore, for somebody who doesn't understand pumps to assume that they can all run at full speed at the same time. The reality, however, is if pump one runs at full speed, it runs the risk of destabilizing pump two by too much hitting pump two. That runs the risk of therefore destabilizing pump three, which takes the entire system down. An uneducated individual, somebody who's not a pumping engineer, would look at that and say, oh yeah, look, it's within reason that they run between this amount and that amount. They wouldn't understand that combination of all three running at maximum. How does your security blanket gain that subject matter expertise to understand that situation? Because that's a very simplified case. And if we look at a power station or we look at any other form of critical national infrastructure, understanding what is normal for an object but not normal in a system is far more complex.
Exactly. You're quite right. And if you expand that even further to a global scale, a global manufacturer, the problem becomes even greater because you have localized teams focused in looking after their own world, but they could be part of a much bigger global whole. And so what we have to do here, again, is understand just exactly what you're describing here. What does good look like? What's normal, if there is such a thing? But what should this environment be doing? But then what are other parameters that can exist or should equally, by extrapolation, not exist? So what we have is a policy-driven solution. So effectively what we're able to do is, by applying policy in discussion with the particular environment, figure out what does good look like, what is allowed, but equally what isn't allowed, and we control that through granular policy. So effectively we can lay down guidelines such that if certain scenarios, anomalies occur, we can take action. Now, that action doesn't mean stop that process, for example. That would be a very bad thing to do in this kind of environment. Oh, yeah, that doesn't look quite right, so we'll just turn off the power station. Absolutely not. What we're going to do is notify somebody that actually we seem to have something occurring here that is outside the norm. We've got a scenario developing that we've defined should not be occurring, and therefore we should look at this closely, take action accordingly, but then obviously we're just going to report that in the IT space.
But that doesn't really address my question of how do you understand that all three pumps running at maximum is outside of the norm. Because To all intents and purposes, if each pump is capable of running at a set level, anybody who doesn't understand the implications of that wouldn't know that's outside of the norm. So on your teams, are you bringing in those OT engineers, those pumping engineers, those system engineers who don't sit inside IT, and using them to help develop the rules and the controls?
The deployment of the solution is done in close conjunction with the customer, of course. We don't just take an out-of-the-box solution, plug it in and say, away you go, that's fine, because particularly in the OT space, every environment is different. So the deployment of the solution, the development of the policies, how we're going to look after this environment is done in very close cooperation with the OT engineers, the people who are responsible for this environment. So in your example, they would say, right, this is for a pump sensor. These pumps are going to be covered in sensors reporting back information such as the speed of the pump, for example. Then they would say, okay, this is okay for one pump, but if we see three speed sensors all reporting maximum velocity, we absolutely cannot have that force scout. So we need to understand if that situation occurs. And if it occurs, we would understand that because we've laid down policy that says we can see this happening. We could call that an anomaly because it shouldn't occur. And in that scenario, we report back to the engineers, the people responsible for running this environment, and say, okay, you absolutely need to have a look at this because there's something occurring. It might actually be okay, but that's where we need the deep intelligence of the people who are running these OT environments to actually take control and say, okay, you've highlighted this challenge for us. I would not have had any idea that that was happening, but for the fact that you were here. So now what do I do about it? And they can take appropriate action. And this is common. We do see this when we're deploying into the OT space. As I've mentioned, visibility is where it starts. But it's not visibility alone that gives you the power. It's what you do with that information that gives you the power. Nobody would come to me and say, Chris, I want to buy some visibility from you. They actually come to me and say, I want to buy a solution. And a solution is only a solution if it's solving a problem. That's when a solution becomes a solution, isn't it? It's fixing a pain. So they will come to us and say, right, okay, we've seen these kind of challenges and we want to take control. We help them to have an informed decision about what's going on.
So one of the natural homes for that information is a machine learning solution, but not just one built again and again and again for each customer, but one where you can gather that knowledge from a pumping engineer on one job and understand that's an interesting thing that a lot of people wouldn't see. Yeah. How do we put that into a larger machine learning solution that all customers can then draw on when they're building their rules? When I look at the website, I don't see that offered as a product. Are you on the line to doing that? Are you offering that but not talking about it on the site? Where does that sit?
That is a very important part of our offering, Ian. Orchestration is a bit of an industry buzzword at the moment. It means different things to different people. What we talk about is the automation of security workflows. What does that mean? Well, we're an open platform, so we're gathering rich contextual information about the whole extended enterprise, IT, OT, IoT, cloud, data center and campus. We see end-to-end what's happening. We build rich contextual information, situational awareness, if you will. This is that foundational layer that I mentioned. We're then able to share that information with the other security tools that these organizations are using. We're not replacing all of these best-of-breed tools. We're making them smarter, if you will. So if an organization is using a SIM tool or a big data analysis tool, whatever it may be that they use to interrogate informed opinion about what's going on, we can share this information with those tools that organization may be using. And I think generally speaking, you know, the levels of automation that we see across the whole industry right now, I'm sure you would agree with this, it's low, right? Maybe as low as 5% of automation at the moment. People actually taking automated responses to what they're seeing out there. That has to shift because we're seeing so many more devices. You know, everyone's becoming more and more connected. So our view is that, you know, to enable us to drive greater degrees of automation is going to enable people to take decisions more quickly, to be more operationally efficient, to focus on the real high-value tasks and not just trying to sort the wheat from the chaff of all the alerts that might come out.
But one of the problems of just relying on automation is as much as it can help us make a decision faster, it can also screw our lives over a lot faster.
Yeah.
One of the things we see in cybersecurity in particular is we have so much threat intelligence generated by automated systems that actually we don't know what to do with it. What we need is actionable intelligence. So how do you refine that automation and that threat knowledge into a set of actionable steps that a client can take so that they're not re-evaluating all of that stuff every single time it comes in because they don't have the time?
Simple answer to that in context. Understanding exactly what it is that's going on, but understanding it looking through the lens of a logical taxonomy. What I mean by that, if we look at something simple like network segmentation, right? This is a really interesting conversation right now. Lots of people are talking about network segmentation. There's an understanding that there's a need to control who goes where to do what on the network. The concept of zero trust is well recognized. Zero trust has been around for 10 years. That's not a new concept. What has been challenging, though, is implementing a zero trust architecture because the tools that we've been using lack context. In other words, we're trying to determine an IP address is talking to another IP address, but we don't really understand the nature of the source and the destination. And should it be allowed to do that or not? And where else is it talking? It's very difficult to gain contextual insights. What we bring, what we fundamentally change is context that says, okay, this is not just an IP address talking to this IP address. We will say, you have got a CCTV camera here. We can name the manufacturer of it, maybe the OS version that it's running. We can give contextual insight to say, okay, logically, this is what this endpoint is. So you understand it's a camera. And then we can make a determination that says we can see where that endpoint, that camera, is trying to talk to. And we can identify the destination. Okay, it's talking to the video server. Great, that's exactly what this camera should be doing. We can see that path. But what if that camera's trying to talk somewhere else as well, maybe trying to talk out to the internet? And we find this a lot with IoT devices. They're quite noisy on the network. They don't just do the job that we're asking them to do. They want to do a whole range of other things. Maybe they're talking to the internet to download a firmware update. That could be legitimate. Or maybe they're being corralled by a bad actor out there to bring them together into some kind of botnet. Who knows, right? But wouldn't it be interesting if you actually understood and can visualize through a logical taxonomy that said, okay, I can see these endpoints are talking to this destination. It's in plain English. It's a camera talking to this service. And you know what? I'm okay with that. And I'm going to allow that to happen. Now we're talking about being able to logically and dynamically segment your network. And this has been a real challenge for any organization trying to segment.
But network segmentation is not new. In the 1980s, when I first entered this business, we would tie specific terminals back to the mainframe by the connection they had onto that network and the connection into the mainframe. As we move forward into the world of Novell, we use different network cards for different groups of people. One for the users on this server, one for server-to-server communication, one for management control. The management team would be on their own individual physical network. We moved from there to having virtual networks, which we deployed into organizations. So segmentation is not a new thing.
It's not new.
So what is happening now to bring segmentation back and make it effective in this more complex world?
So let me take you back to where you started that story in. You know, those years ago, it was great, right? Everything was physical. When you started your conversation there, everything was connected by a wire. Great. All I got to do is track the wire, and I know exactly where it's talking. And it can't talk anywhere else because, quite frankly, it's joined by a wire and it's plugged in at both ends. Obviously, now we're living in this connected world. We've got so many more devices out there. So number one challenge is just the volume of things on the network, wirelessly connecting to the network. This is the first challenge, right? There's just a lot of things out there that we need to try and understand and figure out, you know, who's talking to what. So that's the first challenge, just the different ways that people talk to a network presents a problem. But then the other challenge, of course, you know, when we're talking about just the diversity of endpoints connecting, that if you've got a whole long list of IP addresses and you're trying to figure out how to segment a network, that actually becomes a really difficult challenge. And of course, the third thing is the world just does not stand still. So even if you think I've cracked this problem on a Monday, by Tuesday, the world's moved on. Somebody's brought something else into that environment. And the CISO, you know, who is responsible maybe for the whole of the security in the environment, might not even know that that's happened. You know, if I came into your home environment and plugged a laptop into your router, would you know about it? You probably would, wouldn't you? But many people wouldn't. If you think about that in an office environment, you've got open network ports, you know, people could just come along. And this is a common use case that I talk to organizations about. Their concern around rogue device detection. How do I even know that something's connected? But then this notion of, okay, even for the things that are on the network, you know, how do I understand where they're talking to? So you're right, segmentation has been around a long time, but there are still a lot of organizations that are struggling to implement segmentation in a meaningful way. And so we still have large, flat networks, and we see those being exploited frequently. People are able to connect and then pivot across to a high-value target. And then at the same time, we've got overwhelmed SOCs, security operation centers, with people who are just trying to sort the wheat from the chaff of all these alerts that are coming in. So what we need is context. What we have to be able to understand is who is going where to do what. The concept of zero trust means giving them the minimum viable access to services to get their job done effectively. And if we can see all of the traffic flows between these different endpoints, we can then make defensible decisions, act on actionable insights.
But we're talking about physical objects. We have a bigger challenge coming up, and that is the API generation, where we're talking about programmatic connections. At that point, we really don't know where those APIs are talking. We don't know how secure our APIs are. We don't know whether that API to API call is good or bad. because we don't have the knowledge to interrogate it. And in fact, if we were to try, the business would be up in arms, because the whole point of the API is to make it simpler, make it faster, not slow it down. We can't talk about this type of security without touching on APIs. So how do you bring APIs into this connectivity problem, into this segmentation problem, into this need to understand?
It is a challenge, right? All that we're talking about here with APIs, with cloud, it's all about driving agility. That's really what we want to do. We want to enable people to get their jobs done faster, more efficiently. The central control within an organization is kind of devolving responsibility to these different groups to say, you know what, I'm going to give you the tools to get your jobs done. Just allow these different conversation paths to take place, maybe allow you to spin up workloads in the cloud. But again, we run the risk of turning this whole scenario into the Wild West, don't we? And actually, we're losing control, not gaining control in that example. What we have to be able to do is, by talking to the network, by understanding the traffic that's traversing across the network, in some way, we've got to be able to make a determination that says, okay, I'm happy for that network path to be occurring. I'm happy for this traffic to be flowing based upon consultation with the customer when we're deploying about, you know, what their environment should look like, what should be good, what's not allowed. By talking to the network, we're able to make these kind of network level decisions, if you will, and begin to determine if we're seeing a flow between an API or cloud-based workload or a physical endpoint, whatever it may be. There's still going to be some kind of source and destination going on with this conversation, and we can understand, is that good for business or is that not good for business? And in which case, we want to put in some kind of rule to stop that happening. And this is a real challenge. Again, when we come to network segmentation, this notion of driving policy is sometimes what stops anybody taking action, because they can think, okay, I do want to stop that happening, but what if my action has an unintended consequence? And by putting a policy in place, I actually end up taking the whole business offline or taking a bunch of people offline that suddenly can't do their job. This analysis can kind of lead to paralysis when it comes to network segmentation. So again, what we enable organizations to do, which is really important, is to be able to design, test, and simulate segmentation policy. So in other words, we take the total view, we can show them everything that's happening on their network, and then begin to help them to logically decide what they want to allow. And then they can design policy and test it before they even go into production. So in other words, they can test that they don't have that unintended consequence. They can make sure that the outcome gives them exactly what they're looking for and the confidence, therefore, to move that policy into production and say, right now, I am beginning to segment my network in a meaningful way and take control in a way that I'm just not able to do. And the other conversation, if you will, around segmentation is that, you know, we're not replacing other really good segmentation technologies that exist out there. We're complementing what already exists. What we're enabling organizations to do is take control of east-west traffic in the campus, or the flow of traffic between data center and cloud, or north-south between data center. You know, traffic's flowing all over the place, isn't it, these days, right? So we'll work with the next generation firewalls or the micro-segmentation technologies. And what we bring is context. What we help organizations to do is drive dynamic segmentation to evolve to their ever-changing world and maintain a well-segmented environment that actually enables them to know that people are only able to go, you know, to the places that they should to get their job done and not elsewhere and pose a potential risk.
In the mid to late 80s, when I first started doing networks, I thought life was complicated. But who'd be a network engineer today, eh?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, I talked to some really interesting guys. I mean, their depth of knowledge is just fascinating. I'm sure some of those guys look at it like the Matrix. They just understand it, you know, and they don't actually need anything at all because they just live and breathe network protocols. But for the majority of people, you know, they need some kind of intelligence, some kind of context that helps them take control. The network is ever changing, isn't it? And you've seen that over the many years, right?
Chris, thank you for talking to us today.
My pleasure. Really enjoyed it. Thank you, Ian.